Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Originally founded in 2010 as Two Champs and a Chum, we decided to rebrand when the game relaunched in the second edition. A huge thank you goes out to Fantasy Flight Games and George R. R. Martin for this game and world we love, and of course to my co-hosts and you, the listeners. Please, if you enjoy the show, leave us a review on iTunes or your platform of choice, comment on our Facebook threads, or even better, support us on Patreon. We love turning that kind of support back into the community.
This is Season 14 of the White Book Podcast. Welcome back to the White Book Podcast. We're here to talk about stuff. Mainly the same stuff, because somehow every week, completely unbidden, despite the fact that we try to experience new pop culture media, we continue to return to rant about, I don't know, Grant Morrison, Warren Ellis, and Gilmore Girls for some reason. So join us this week as myself, Will, and my co-hosts Roy and Aaron see how long we can avoid one of those topics.
So I rewatched a Gilmore Girls episode this week, the one with the naked guy. I just picked a random episode.
Marty.
Marty wakes up on the floor as a naked guy. I feel like I knew so many Martys in college.
Yeah,
I feel like Roy might have been a Marty in college.
I was not a Marty.
I saw that episode recently too.
Marty's not bad. What's wrong with Marty? It's not like he's Logan.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yes, but Logan is a special kind of evil.
But yeah, Marty's just a kid who drinks too much at his first college party.
Yeah, that's not that. Marty's not a Marty's a character who continues on the show, Glazer.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Marty in that episode is fine. Like, yes, I knew a lot of
specifically about that episode. The episode I watched.
Sure, fine. Okay, yes. In that one particular episode, Marty starts off fine. That is fair. If you ignore the rest of his development as a character, Marty is fine.
He just sort of disappears pretty quickly.
I have not caught enough to know his character development, but I will say on Kristen's current rewatch of the show, I've caught enough episodes to finally put together. I never hear people really talk about this, but Lorelai is also a terrible person. So that's something.
Yeah, but she's charming and Rory isn't.
I think I like Rory better, honestly.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a take.
I think the first 3 to 4.5 to 4 seasons of Rory is like fine. It's just the second half of the show. Rory is just
Might be because that's the vast majority of the episodes that I have caught have all been in the high school years. The Chilton years, you might say.
Yeah.
Rather than the Yale years.
It's a stronger show while she's at Chilton.
Yeah.
In some ways it is, in some ways it isn't. Yeah.
I enjoy the more Stars Hollow centric the show is.
Yeah. The more Taylor, the better.
You said Kirk really strangely.
Taylor and Kirk. You know what? Bring them on.
I don't know. I mean, why don't we just start with Miss Maisel then, since we've started with Gilmore Girls. So Glazer, I assume that you're the one who put him on this document. How did Amy Sherman Palladino's like masterpiece end?
It was phenomenal. They did a bunch of time jumps this season to show different parts of their relationship and then like kept circling back to how she finally, spoiler, this is not a huge spoiler because it's that kind of show, but like how she ends up succeeding and like the step she has to take. And it's just, it's phenomenal. My wife decided that she is Susie Meyerson, which she is not, but I admire the aspirations here. It's a better start to finish show than the Gilmore Girls for sure. It's almost certainly a better show. I don't think I'll ever love it the way I love Gilmore Girls, but it is consistently fantastic. That's all I got. One of you should watch it, but neither of you will, because you don't like good things. You have to watch things like Aurora Tear Garden.
If I can convince Kristen to watch new things, maybe I can get her to give that a go. Since
I mean, she's watching Gilmore Girls.
Involvement. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, more than involvement. They wrote and directed the whole damn thing.
Well, okay. Wouldn't you say they're involved? I don't know. Direct control. How's that? Is that the next step up from involvement? Okay. That's fair. But, you know, we will have a little bit of a time gap to fill now that we have finished all, I believe it's 18 of the Aurora Tea Garden films. All 18.
The hell?
Yeah.
Okay.
We did
it. That's a choice you can make.
That's mostly all I can say about them. They're fairly forgettable and interchangeable. They've been good for some laughs along the way. The last movie made a couple weird choices. One that did kind of make sense, because I'd heard some rumors that they were like looking at doing some recasting to do some prequels and that type of thing. And there's a fairly extended flashback sequence with some younger actors in it. So that kind of made sense. But then also this one had a lot of Scooby-Doo vibe, so to speak, like in the sense that all of this stuff looks supernatural and a few of the things are not really explained, but it turns out to be a human in the end and that kind of thing. Plus her husband in the show or the film series like inexplicably has at least for these type of films a different hairstyle and a gigantic, incredibly dark beard in this film that he's never had before. I really had to stare at his face for a while and like hear his voice to decide that they had not actually recast him randomly. Cause it was a very jarring change. And that's all I got. That is the most exciting content of those films.
Fair enough. That sounds like you love your wife very much.
Exactly. Yes, it does.
Let's just save the good thing for last. So I watched The Little Mermaid, and I'm not sure who watched that cartoon movie and was like, you know what would make it better? An extra hour.
Whoa. I mean, all of the live actions have been longer than their animated counterparts, right?
And the original movie is an hour and 20 minutes. This is 2 hours and 20 minutes. The actual, like, when she becomes a human and goes with Eric, there's a lot of like romance stuff. Like, all that stuff is fine, and everything else in the movie is a freaking disaster.
Wow.
I mean, so it was just
surprising.
Painfully slow. The final like climactic scene just straight up doesn't work. It's bad. It's bad. Oof. Aurora's a good character. Aurora, no. You got me saying Aurora now. Ariel is a good character. Like, she works really well. She's better than the original. And everything else about that movie is kind of a disaster.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't surprise me. I don't have any of the, let's say, standard internet qualms with this film in particular, but I will say in general, I'm very tired of the live action remakes and adding like time and stretching things like that. It kind of winds up feeling, I mean, not only them retreading stuff, which is a pain, but also just like stretching for filler content like they had to do with the Hobbit films.
I didn't even make it through the first of those. It was so bad. I tried to watch the second at some point. Like, the Hobbit films are some of my least favorite, like, anything ever.
Yeah. They're a very egregious example. I'm sure even The Little Mermaid was not that bad.
I mean, it was still one 2-hour movie, not a 7-hour epic.
Yeah. But when you're stretching any of these animated films like that, like, you know, is there really enough there to justify that?
Yeah, I dig that. All right. Are we on to the main event? No. How I Met Your Father, which for some reason you're still watching.
I am. I just watched the latest episode right before recording. It continues to be a show. It is one of the most showiest of shows I've seen. It's kind of making me want to rewatch some early How I Met Your Mother to see if it is as kind of just zany and disjointed as this. I mean, there's kind of a central storyline going through this season of Sophie, like, looking for her dad because she was raised by a single mom and all that and blah, blah, blah. She actually just found him here after the mid-season.
So then the show should be called How I Met My Father.
Yeah, exactly. But, like, aside from her kind of central through line, all of the other characters are just all over the place with some like flavor of the week plot and usually multiple plots. They'll kind of split, you know, here's a team of two characters doing the one thing. Here's a different team doing another thing. And they'll kind of spread those around. But to me, from what I recall, and maybe this is from a place of looking at all of How I Met Your Mother, it just seems like this is so disjointed when everybody kind of had some actual like arcs and stories going in How I Met Your Mother. So that's why I need to rewatch some of the real early stuff there and see if my memory is playing tricks on me. I don't know.
Playing tricks on you, Will.
Okay, good. I will say at least that her father turns out to be Agent Coulson, which is kind of awesome.
Oh, wow. Does Captain America show up?
Not yet, but if you wondered what Clark Gregg was up to, this is it.
Guest appearances on a How I Met Your Mother spinoff.
Yeah. Well, you know, with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. done, he had to come up with something.
Ooh. I mean, I guess he could have just been like, guys, can I please do Secret Invasion?
He may be in Secret Invasion. We don't know.
Yeah, it's still possible. Fingers crossed. I mean, if there's any show to do that type of thing, it's Secret Invasion. Like, if you're going to do that at all.
It's been rumored that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is going to play a role in that show for a long time, so we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
Really? I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Lots of rumors, some suspicious kind of timing gaps and the like with what's her name? Chloe Bennett, that played Quake, that would conceivably line up with some Secret Invasion filming, things like that.
Quake is a good Marvel snap card. I approve.
There we go. Everything needs to go off of Marvel Snap.
It's true.
It's true.
Coulson's a good Marvel Snap card too. But I think Quake is secretly better.
Secret Warrior?
Exactly. Great comic run. Hickman. Hickman's first Marvel work, I believe.
Oh, really? Nice.
I think so.
I realized that.
I thought he wrote for the Ultimates before that.
I don't believe so, but I'll Google it. Jonathan Hickman. Ooh, that's not what I thought that man would look like.
Oh, uh-oh.
Oh, now I have to Google Jonathan Hickman.
Me too. Hickman. I'm picturing a bearded Brandon Sanderson.
This man looks exactly like I thought he would look. Okay.
Legion of Monsters, Astonishing Tales of Mojo World. First real work is Secret Work.
He's not so far off from what I expected. Okay.
So, yeah, he had Fantastic Four was before Ultimate 2, apparently. So, Legion of Monsters is I don't even know what that is. I've never heard of it. It's just a ton of book. And then he did Astonishing Tales Mojo World 1-6 that I assume no one read.
Like, Zatanna, the DC character? That's awesome.
No, Satana.
Oh.
Hell, whatever. Damien Hellstrom's sister.
I gotcha. Yep.
And then hit it. So Secret Warriors is his first major Marvel work, I think it's fair to say.
That's fair. Yeah.
And then he did jumped right into Fantastic Four for like a million years.
And then is about to do Doctor Strange.
Is he? That's interesting.
Yeah, he's coming back to Marvel. Has not
been a good book in a long time. Good, since he saved the X-Men.
So they hope he'll save the mystical side of that. Of the.
I mean, that's never sold and never sold anything close to X-Men, right?
Yeah, I'll be saying that's what their theory is because they brought him in to do it. So.
Oh man, I forgot the S.H.I.E.L.D. run. I really enjoyed.
Nice.
And then after all that, he finally started doing Ultimates. Ooh. And then Avengers, which was better than anyone remembers. Hoxpox.
Huh. Infinity.
Yeah. That's all still Avengers-y stuff to me. Okay. That was a nice aside.
Let's talk about
Ted Lasso. Yeah, look, no one yelled at each other because we didn't say Warren Ellis or Grant Morrison, so it was great.
Ah, damn it. The trifecta. Everything I mentioned in the intro.
There you go. But you're not wrong. You also didn't bother to introduce us. So we might as well just be Warren Ellis, Grant Morrison, and the Gilmore Girls. Warren Ellis.
That's a great name for a really terrible cover band.
I think it's insulting to Grant Morrison to identify me with them, so I'll be the Gilmore Girls, I guess.
That leaves Will as Warren Ellis.
Oh, joy. Any joke I feel I can think of at this point are going to be in poor taste. So let's move on.
Wait, I actually tried to explain Grant Morrison to my therapist for like 25 minutes during a session last week.
Of all the things that you could pay someone. Wait,
Grant Morrison as a person or a Grant Morrison comic?
Like the ideas that Grant Morrison tried to explore, I don't know how we ended up on some fictional tangent. And he loved Everything Ever All at Once. And I was like, you know what? I didn't like Inception. And then we had a long talk about Inception, and Inception always leads me to Grant Morrison. So I ended up on Grant Morrison.
Cannot believe we're going to get it subjected to the Oppenheimer movie soon. Oh my god, it might kill me. The new Christopher Nolan movie that's coming out.
I don't watch Christopher Nolan movies. I decided that they're not good for me. They just make me
angry. I decided they're not good. He's not Grant Morrison. But...
Interesting.
The world would be a better place if.
I'm not sure I would care for a Morrison directed Batman film.
I 1,000% would. That would be so much fun.
I think it would be borderline unintelligible, but we'll see.
I mean, the Batman Unlimited run ended up excellent, and his Nightwing as Batman run was unbelievable.
Okay, admittedly, that was good.
It was like, quite excellent.
Excuse me, they're amazing writers. Amazing writer. I can't speak. I'm so tired. Sorry. All right. Let's finally do Ted.
Yeah, bring it back.
What the hell is D+ content removals?
We're not doing Ted, evidently. So
no, I want that to be last in the section because we're gonna go off on it.
Okay, so the Disney+ content removals. I thought of that while you were talking about stuff a moment ago, and I feel like this kind of fits in the realm of the type of stuff we talk about, and you know, different news on new Marvel movie releases and that type of thing. So I'm curious what you guys feel of kind of the laundry list of content being pulled actually from Disney+ and Hulu last weekend, I think Friday. Though that probably opens the gates more for some other stuff. I mean, I don't have the list in front of me now, but it was relatively notable stuff. A few like Marvel behind the scenes specials, the world according to Jeff Goldblum, even the new Willow show that is not even a year old yet just got pulled.
Runaways got pulled.
Oh, and Runaways. That was what made me think of it earlier, talking Marvel stuff, which I'm super bummed about. I hadn't made it to watching Runaways yet, but
I made it through the first episode and it was not good.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking to a guy who watched Inhumans, so, you know, things can happen. And I assume if they're going to yank the Runaways, even, like, quality stuff like Cloak and Dagger might not be far behind that.
Yep. they don't want to pay royalties to people. Yeah. Like, so that's what they're doing. I mean, they pulled that John Stamos basketball show that was cute. Al and I watched.
Yeah, I forgot about
over
that.
Over the winter. Yeah. I mean, it's the same thing HBO Max did, right? Like, just want to save money. So they've been pulling stuff. So
yeah, it's a weird thing to realize. I didn't kind of understand how the residuals, I believe, if I'm remembering the correct term, work on the streaming stuff, where it's just like they get paid for it existing on the service, not like based on number of views or anything, which is fascinating to me.
I mean, one of the things that seems to be kind of hard to wrap our mind, or at least wrap my mind around, is that while some aspects of the economy have stabilized, like the end of cheap money, thanks to inflation, has like really screwed over Silicon Valley and the Hollywood entertainment complex. So like austerity is just like coming for these.
Like, Roy, we lost you.
My internet's being weird today, so I'm just not going to talk, I think, for the rest of the episode, because I don't.
Yep.
Welcome back, dear listeners, to, you know, after a gap that will be largely non-existent for you guys. But in case you're wondering, there will be no Roy from here on out this episode. Sadly,
I finally drove him crazy. He had a mental breakdown and quit the podcast. So sorry.
Quit the internet entirely. He'll never post anything ever again. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, his internet's being a butt. Yeah. He'll probably be back next time.
Yeah, he will almost certainly be back. But yeah. Anyway, moving on. So the big topic that we were waiting to get to that I wish we had been able to hit while Roy was still here, Ted Lasso, season 3 episodes. What are we on? 10 and 11, I think.
The penultimate one to the penultimate one and the actual penultimate one.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I've never the penultimate. So does that make one of these the ultimate to the penultimate?
So is it must by definition
penultimate episode? Yeah,
huh. The Pretty Penny episode. So the first of these two episodes sucked, and the second was good.
The second was better, I'll say. I don't know if it was like this. Good. So okay, to help the listeners, since I also needed a little bit of to catch back up here. So the first of these episodes that we're complaining about is the...
I'm not complaining about the second. I like the second.
International episode. The World Cup stuff happens. Rebecca goes to the meeting about the Super League. And then the second episode is the one where Ted's mom randomly shows up. Nate is working at the diner and so on. So, okay, there we go. There's a little bit of groundwork. Help listeners remember where we are.
Yep, that's basically it, though, right?
I mean, as far as the broad strokes to establish things, I mean, I'm sure there's more to talk about in the episodes.
I mean, the big problem I had with the first of the episodes was they cut out a lot of the Nate conflict and just moved him straight to redemption without any of the work.
Just straight to the end zone. And honestly, they did the same thing previously to that with his dad. I did not buy that at all. I mean, earlier, like this season, we were seeing his dad being his dad. Right. Yeah. And there's nothing in between. Just suddenly, oh, hey, by the way, I'm better now. Yep. Okay.
You know, I just want you to be happy. What? That's not earned.
That is.
Yeah. All of that was terrible. I did like the Roy Keeley reconciliation. I thought it was reasonably well handled.
And I'm glad to see, barring any weird fallout in the final episode here, I am glad to see that my riot was justified earlier at the start of the season, and that it did succeed in getting Roy and Keeley back together.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think it was the next episode, but they've now turned Jamie into a third wholly unrecognizable character. It's great.
With this whole kind of awkwardly,
Mama's boy
kind
thing.
Of creepily reverting to a little kid with his mom, but also... Yep. Am I the only one that got some real weird, like, sexual undertones? And
nope.
Like,
I don't know what any of that was. That was just weird as hell.
Yeah.
This isn't the Jamie of season one, and it isn't the Jamie of
season the rest three. Of season three. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Like, they're just writing three different characters and having the same actor play them. But okay.
And speaking of just stuff with his mom and what was going on, like, Roy was visibly, like, horrified while at the house. And then yep. weirdly asks for a hug at the end, which I didn't understand. And then Keeley doubly weirdly, like, kind of forbids it. And I don't know. Like, that seemed wholly disconnected from anything that had happened in the episode. I don't know what was going on.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. All the soccer stuff this season has been good, except that, like, they learned the new system without any real conflict, and then everything else has been what the hell.
I mean, arguably that's season. Been the only soccer stuff this season, right? I guess in passing, it looked like they were going to set up something interesting with the new superstar player and all, but
Zappa, who's disappeared and doesn't get mentioned anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
And now so, Roy is suddenly Zappa.
Yeah.
Not Roy, Jamie.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I don't know. It feels a lot. I mean, don't get me wrong. There's a lot of individual scenes that I like. I'm still laughing at stuff in the episodes. But this whole season has kind of felt like they already knew the end point and where they wanted to put everybody. And instead of, like, crafting a path to that, they just meandered wherever they went. And then now they've gotten here to the last couple episodes and went, oh, shit. Remember that endpoint that we already had planned out?
We're there.
Shove everything into place right now.
Yeah, it's good individual scenes. There's no real plot. Like, they've already done all the triumph stuff, so if they just win in the last episode, it's going to be really absurd.
Yeah.
Right? Like, the second last episode is pure triumph, which, again, shakes us up to tragedy at the end. But, like, there have been no soccer stakes, right? Like, making it to the finals from being relegated, right, like, is a huge triumph. Not winning isn't that big a deal at that point.
Yeah.
Like, their fans wouldn't be expecting them to win.
Yeah, the actual soccer stuff is taken mostly a big backseat.
But, like, that's where they're going to have to go for their tragedy at the end, and then Ted leaves after they leave. After they lose, excuse me. Like, this isn't going to make sense. This just isn't going to make sense. Like, there's no way to do... Like, if they have some brilliant twist, I'll be impressed, but nothing about this season has suggested that that is the plan.
Yeah, I don't know.
I did really like the beard Nate stuff.
That was pretty good. That was an individual scene.
There's a lot of good scenes, right? Like... I don't remember others now because most of them have been terrible. Like, with two episodes left, did we really need Roy, Keeley, and the assistant or the you know who I mean, the COO?
Oh, Higgins?
No, the COO of Keeley's job.
Oh, crud.
Also, like, they made...
Yeah. I get
that Rebecca could just pay for Keeley's job thing, but, like, why couldn't she do that in the first place? Like, there's just, like, this season is allergic to conflict. Every conflict is just like, eh, whatever, it'll be fine. Eh, it's better this way.
Yeah, yeah. Or resolves off screen in between episodes. Like,
yeah.
For Nate to actually have some redemption here, we needed to see him, like, grow a spine with Rupert, but we just tune in and he's working at the Greek restaurant.
Yep.
What?
Yeah, I don't know. It's
and Jade is still a different terrible character.
And I mean, she's not even. She's not even a character anymore. Like, oh, sweetie, you want to come see my family? Oh, honey, like what? What that? Yeah,
yeah. She's well, a and it feels weird for her, like being supportive about soccer, and oh, that's what you.
Yeah, really like care she about, ever whatever. Gave a shit
when? Yeah, yeah. When she was actively trolling him previously, like.
Yep.
I don't know.
Yep, none of those works. You know what's a better show? Miss Maisel.
Yeah, there lot. We go.
Like, it's actually plotted out and, like, has an arc. Like, I don't know. I loved season one of Ted Lasso. I like season two of Ted Lasso, and I might be pretending season three doesn't exist.
There you go. I mean, it's much like The Walking Dead. Season one is near perfect, and I just kind of stop there. That may be where I am with Ted Lasso when this is done.
Doesn't seem like a bad idea.
Yeah.
I mean, season two of The Walking Dead is called The Last of Us.
Oh, it just took a long time for them to work on it. COVID delays. I got it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah. Ted Lasso season three, not actually any good.
Yeah. Yeah,
there's a new show. There's a new show we have to watch on Amazon Prime, by the way.
Oh yeah, what's that?
It's called Primo.
I've not even heard of it.
Me neither, but it's on Amazon Prime. It's made by a writer I really like called Shea Serrano. You won't care about
that him. Name. Sounds familiar though.
Yeah, he wrote a lot of stuff for like The Ringer. He wrote like the Scrubs book.
Okay.
He called it Where Do You Think We Are, and he wrote like a book on like a bunch of different sitcoms, on a couple of basketball books, a rap book. Fantastic writer. But he made a sitcom. I think it's a sitcom anyway. But he made a sitcom that's available on Amazon. Hmm. And it was co-produced by Michael Schur.
Oh, okay.
So like, I don't know. Michael Schur has a really good hit rate as far as sitcoms go.
Yeah. Okay. So you said this is called Primo?
Yeah. Primo. It means cousin in Spanish.
Okay.
So Michael Schur has released one show ever I didn't like. The Rutherford Falls.
Oh. Yeah.
Did not enjoy it.
I couldn't finish it. I made it like 4-ish episodes in maybe, and just there was nothing that actually like hooked me.
Yep. Agreed. It was bad Office. But yeah. Like look, The Office and then shows I've never heard of. Like he didn't produce, he just wrote. Then Parks and Rec. Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Master of None for a season. The Good Place. And then a bunch of things I've never heard of that I should probably look into, I guess. Have you ever heard of Sunnyside?
No. All I got is eggs.
So he didn't create any of these shows. Okay. He co-created Rutherford, though, and he co-executive produced Prima. And he did an episode of Black Mirror I should probably watch at some point. Yeah. Like, all things considered, if he is involved, I think it's worth watching.
Okay.
All right. Want to do a couple games real fast and then call it a
night? Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Go for it. Get reels is
starting with me. Yeah, it's a party game that I played over the weekend that I had a good time with. It's a variation on the tried and true apples to apples or cards against humanity style of party game, depending on which of those you audience members are familiar with. The conceit here is that you get a hand of words and are using them to construct a movie title that fits the prompt given by the producers. And the movie titles may just be like a generic comedy, like, I don't know, a generic category, like Buddy Cop or something like that. And you can be more freeform, or it may take some established film title and leave some blanks in it. So like there was one that was Blank Wars, A New Blank, stuff like that. And yeah, it's pretty fun, dumb game. The one thing that I did think was actually pretty neat about it and was honestly almost overwhelming is that unlike something like Cards Against Humanity, where you have one possible answer per card, they actually have a different word written along each edge of the card. So they're square shaped. And so there'll be four possible words you can use, and you can only use one of those four words. And they're double-sided. So really, each card has eight words that all face different directions. And as you are like fighting a time limit to try to put together a funny movie title and flipping cards back and forth and turning them around, it can get a little overwhelming. You have a lot of options in your hand at any given time.
It seems fun if a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's fun. We got some really great gags out of it. I think the standout star was the film Lethal Pork 2. Nice. So yeah. Oh, sorry. And you do also get a card with some free words on it that you can always use that like don't get used up or whatever. You know, things like the, and, those, my, like to help you kind of connect everything else. So yeah, okay. It's good.
All right. Last thing, I started Xenoblade 3. I put like 12 hours or so into it. It's way better than 2, but it does not, and it's got like 10 billion systems that are really cool, but thus far it doesn't have nearly the story hook of 1. So I've heard it gets there, and like it gets super emotional and gets completely crazy, but for now it's just kind of there. I'm gonna keep playing it because I've heard enough good things, but like I'd like more of a story hook for 10 hours.
Okay.
It's a really cool central concept.
What's the central concept on this one?
There's these two countries that are at war. They each live in colonies, and colonies have ranks. But everyone's alive for 10 years. You're born, and you have 10 years, and then you die.
Oh.
So like, or you get killed in the war. And like the war is because each country is stealing the other country's life energy.
Oh, huh. Okay.
It seems like relatively early, like the governments might be using this for some other nefarious purpose. But it's very good so far. It's just like we established that in the first like 10 minutes. And like we've gotten like the government has weird priesty bad guys that are coming after you. And like, okay, got it. We're good. Let's do something like where I care about the characters now, please. Sorry, excuse me. And that's it. That's all I really have to say. I'd like to play more. It's got so many battle systems, so many systems built on systems. You can fuse and combine characters. You have special super moves and a meter for that. Characters from the different country both play slightly differently. And then like you've got fundamentally a job system. You've got like 7 characters in battle at once and semi-real-time MMO combat. And you can switch on the fly between characters. It is a lot. And fighting boss battles are really fun, and fighting trash mobs, it's nice because pressing select makes it auto battle.
Ah, there you go. Yeah, that helps against trash a lot. Okay. So grinding then must be way easier. So how does scaling get funky?
So no, at least not yet, but so every level matters a lot. Like if you're 1 or 2 levels above or below something, they get significantly easier and or harder as the case may be. But it's not like that big a deal. What makes the game complete is that the world is absolutely humongous. It's one of those games that gives you like a just ginormous world. And like every map is like humongous. They started doing this in Xenoblade, right? Like Xenoblade had really big worlds. This is something crazy, like 3 times as big as the original Xenoblade world. But they did this so well that when they made Xenoblade X, that Nintendo hired those people away, or had the people who worked on these games work on Breath of the Wild to make that world big and open.
Oh, okay.
So it's the same basic theory here that the world is just gigantic and relatively quickly. Like, there's still zones, but you can go almost anywhere.
Huh.
So, yeah, that's where we are.
Right on.
And I guess we're done.
I guess so. It feels weird to have it done so fast.
Yeah, well, I'm going to pass out because I am, like, bloody exhausted today for some reason.
Well, there we go, listeners. Thanks for joining us on the wild journey this episode has been.
Yeah, I mean, look, they won't know it's wild. They'll just be like, hey, why is this episode so short? And then, danger zone, bye!